title of the lesson this morning, as you can see, is Piety by Pretense. And perhaps we ought to start off with a couple of definitions of the words that are in the title there. First of all, piety. That's not a word that we particularly use very often, but it means religious devotion and reverence to God, what we would think of then as religiousness, or to use a more biblical term, righteousness. The word pretense had a number, at least maybe five definitions in the dictionary, pretty much all closely related. The one that I like the best, that seemed to become the closest to what I'm talking about in this lesson this morning, is a false appearance or action intended to deceive. The word pretend comes from the word pretense. So when you're putting on a pretense, you're pretending to be something you're not really, so that what you're pretending to be is just a facade. It's a false facade, something superficial. People can be pious, that is, they can come across as being reverent toward God or devout, devoted to God. They can come across as being righteous according to biblical standards, but that can be just a pretense on the part of some. They can have just an appearance of righteousness without being really righteous. That's what I want to address this morning. But we asked the question in the beginning, why would a person want merely to appear righteous or pious rather than being actually pious? Well, let me give you several reasons why that would be the case. A pretense of piety rather than actual piety makes life easier. In other words, you get the appearance of righteousness at a pretty low cost. Because being actually righteous would cost you something. So people, when they appear righteous, are actually trying to get something cheap. Take, for example, Ananias and Sapphira, his wife, in Acts the 5th chapter, verses 1 through 11. You may recall the story. There were two Christians in the church at Jerusalem. They lied to God about the amount of money that they had given from the sale of their property. And they were confronted about that, and they died because of their lie. Now, they knew that they were not giving the whole amount, as apparently they had claimed. They knew that they were lying, but they wanted the prestige that would come to them as a result of other Christians thinking that they had made such a big sacrifice, they had given the whole price that they had obtained from the sale of their property. So you see, what they really want, what Ananias and Sapphira really wanted, was the appearance of religiousness, or appearance of living a sacrificial and therefore righteous life without really giving all of the money. So they lied. So this pretense was a way of getting the appearance of righteousness, or getting righteousness for all practical purposes, on the cheap. And since people do not spend most of their time in the presence of those whose respect they value, perhaps, I mean, okay, what I'm trying to say, at least we spend most of our time in one another's presence? How often do we see him? Basically, we see one another for 3 hours here on Sunday morning, okay? So That's a way. We don't have to worry about being righteous all the other time. And basically, that's the point, the relevancy of the lesson that I want to present this morning. That the righteousness we have here should not be just a pretense, should not be just a front that we put on, and then live the way we would like to live, indulge the sins of the flesh all the other 6 days of the week, or 6.5 days of the week. Okay, what we are here and what we're doing here today should encourage us to live righteously even when we're not in one another's direct presence as we are now. But to give another reason why someone would simply want to just put on a pretense of piety, Some feel more confident about their piety and the reward they hope to get for it by confirming it with their own self-appointed efforts and sacrifices. You know, 1 Corinthians, the 13th chapter, verse 3, Paul talks about some that would even go so far as to deliver up their bodies to be burned. He says, "And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing." You might ask, surely a person who delivers his body to be burned, or as some Muslim suicide bombers, to use a modern day example, would allow themselves, their bodies to be blown to bits in order to kill others in the name of their religion, why would they do something like that? Because they think that by doing something like that, by making the supreme sacrifice, in effect, they're purchasing their way into heaven. So that's the way some look at it. They are literally trying to buy their way into paradise. Now, some people may not go that far, but they may make other sacrifices. You may think, oh, a person who is really living a sacrificial life, who is really working hard in his religion, surely he must be pleasing to God. No, he may be doing that for selfish reasons. Possibly may be doing that for very selfish reasons. Like the Jews, according to Paul in Romans 9, verse 32, who sought righteousness by their own meritorious works. And he goes on to say a little bit later in chapter 10, verse 3, that they were not satisfied with God's righteousness or God's way of making them righteous. They sought their own righteousness or their own means of making themselves righteous. Third, piety by pretense also allows one to deceive by appearance rather than declaration. In other words, he can say, oh, you just misunderstood. I didn't actually say this or that. Reminds me of the example, for instance, of David in 1 Samuel, the 21st chapter, verse 13, who didn't say he was insane, but he certainly acted like he was insane because he felt threatened by the Philistines around him. So he wanted to present himself as some harmless madman. So what did he do? Well, the scripture says he let the saliva dribble down in his beard, you know, like an insane person might do. Okay, now he didn't say, I'm insane. I mean, do insane people say that? But even though they may not declare that, they act like they are. So in other words, a person who is putting on an appearance of righteousness, well, he's acting as if he is righteous, but he's not saying that he is, so he can't be accused of lying, but he's still deceiving by his actions. And finally, for the pretender to piety, the pretense is or has become the reality. You know, this is one fascinating aspect of lying to me. In other words, the pretender actually thinks and acts as if his pretense is the reality. He might know that his piety is only a pretense, but he chooses not to think about that and instead to believe or act as if he believes his own lie. He actually winds up deceiving himself. And these scriptures that I've put on the screen here are scriptures that warn not just against deceiving people, but against deceiving yourselves. So, self-deception can be a real problem. Because by long practice of his pretense, the pretender can actually desensitize his conscience, numb it, or callous it, as Paul indicates it can be done in Ephesians 4:19. And in the process, what he does is he normalizes for himself, he normalizes the abnormal and makes himself think that his abnormal behavior or behavior that is contrary to piety and righteousness is actually real righteousness and piety. So he is actually delusional. He deceives himself. It gets to the point where he, for all practical purposes, believes his own lie. Let me give you an example of something like this it's a phenomenon that I find fascinating. That the way the human brain works, that we can get to the point where we believe our own lies, or we, in essence, give them credence. I was actually doing a little bit of online research on another subject, church attendance. And at the bottom, or the end of the comments, this was on Wikipedia. I know some people criticize Wikipedia, but for general things like this, it seems to be fairly accurate. That's my impression. But anyway, at the end of the article, it had a section on criticisms that were made on the studies done on church attendance. And they found out that people don't necessarily attend a church as they may actually report that they attend a church. Now, you can imagine, okay, here's some sociologists, they're doing a survey on church attendance. They may call you up on the phone or call someone up on the phone. Don't want to accuse you. Call someone up on the phone and say, well, how often do you attend church? Would you say that you attend church at least once a week? Because I think that was the standard that they were using. Do you attend church weekly? Okay. People over self-reported that they attended church more than they actually did. Let me just read some excerpts because I find this fascinating, because this is an example of the sort of thing that I'm talking about right now. In the early 1990s, American sociologists found that weekly attendance at Protestant and Catholic churches in one rural county in Ohio was only about 20%. Whereas self-reported church attendance was 36%. So you see there's a 16% gap there between how much people actually attended church and how much they said they attended church. That's a pretty big gap. The researchers have been wary of accusing over-reporters of dishonesty, as they found in the study that those who over-report do so mainly to maintain perceptions of themselves as churched Americans, not because they are afraid to reveal to the interviewer that they are bad Christians. Now, this is the strange thing to me, because the interviewer, he might have been conducting his interview over the phone. I don't know, maybe they did door-to-door canvassing. I don't know how they got the data about church attendance. But anyway, the people who are taking the survey are probably strangers to these people. They'll never see these people again. And the people who are being interviewed about their church attendance know that these people are never going to see them again. But instead, well, in the worst case scenario, they lied to them. They over-reported their church attendance. In some cases, they might not have been conscious about it. They just feel this need because they want to think they go to church. They inflate the numbers. They tell people they attend church more than they really do. So, why am I going into this? Because it's an example of how important it is for people to feel good about themselves. And sometimes people will want to think that they're really better than they actually are. In this case, they attend church more than they actually do. And they will actually tell people that they're better than they are, when it's not really true, because what others think of them, or the impression that they create in the minds of others, even if it's a false impression that they've created, allows them to think that they're really good people. Or in this case, that they go to church more than they really do, which is supposed to be a standard for goodness in our society. So what happens then? Well, what we find here is that the pretender gives greater weight to the illusion he is able to create in the minds of others than he gives to what he knows is reality. So, That's significant. People will often speak and act contrary to what they know to be the truth if the truth threatens their standing in the eyes of others. Now there's maybe to you by now has become a particularly famous example of this because I've used it quite a bit in my preaching. But in John the 12th chapter, verses 42 and 43, it says, "Nevertheless, many of the rulers believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they were not confessing him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the approval of men more than the approval of God." They loved the approval of men, the praise of men, more than they loved the approval of God. Why? Because you can't see God. God doesn't speak directly to you. He doesn't say, "Good boy" or "Good girl" or something like that. "I'm happy with you." No. At best, we would have to imply that God is pleased with us by the fact that we have complied with what the Scriptures say. But on the other hand, people who put more emphasis upon what people think of them, well, they can see these people. These people can tell them, "You've done good, you've done right," something to that effect. So they want to live in the here and now and hear it from people's mouths now. They give more credence to that than something that they can imply about God's feelings from what they read in the Scriptures and their own actions in compliance therewith. So, what a person thinks others think of him is typically dependent upon, and thus more important than, what he thinks of himself. So, in other words, what we think of ourselves, whether we assess ourselves as good people or bad people, to a large extent depends upon what others tell us. Whether they tell us we're good or bad. Because it's hard to think that we're good people when everybody else might be telling us we're bad. Vice versa. It's hard to think that we're bad when everybody else around us thinks that we're good. So that's why the illusion that we're able to create in the minds of others about us is really the basis for what we think about ourselves. So what others tell us about ourselves, or what we're able to get them to think about us, is often more weighty than what we know the reality is. All right, having said that, let me just look fairly quickly with you, I think, at several examples of Bible pretenders, or what I call pious pretenders here in the Bible. And the first of these is King Ahaz, king of Judah. There's an interesting example of him in Isaiah the 7th chapter. Now, he was a wicked king. He was an idolater. He did not follow the law of God. But on one occasion during his reign, the king of Israel and the king of Aram or Syria are going to attack him, and did attack him. And God wishes to reassure him through the prophet Isaiah that these attackers are not going to be successful in their attacks on him. So beginning in verse 10 of Isaiah the 5th chapter, reading, we see, says, "Then the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, 'Ask a sign for yourself from the Lord your God. Make it as deep as Sheol or high as heaven.' But Ahaz said, 'I will not ask, nor will I test the Lord.'" Now, that's amazing, really. What Ahaz is saying is, "Listen, you don't have to show me a sign. I believe you. You know, I have that much faith in God. You don't even have to give me a sign. Even though you've offered me a sign, my choice of signs, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to ask for a sign." What's he doing? He's acting as if he's righteous, that he's pious, that he's too reverent to God, toward God, to ask for a sign, even though God has offered him his choice of signs. Well, how did God feel about that? Then he said, "Listen now, O house of David," because Ahaz was of the dynasty or house of David. Is it too slight a thing for you to try the patience of men, that you will try the patience of my God as well? Now here's the irony. He says, try in verse 13. You try the patience of God. Ahaz has just said, I'm not going to test the Lord. Isaiah said, or God said through Isaiah, you're doing exactly that by declining to ask for a sign that I have offered to you. Now, sure, God had promised that Ahaz's enemies would be unsuccessful in their attack on him. And God warned that you have to believe in order to have the fulfillment of this promise. He had said at the end of verse 9, if you will not believe, you surely shall not last. Then God goes on to say, you know, ask for yourself a sign to, you know, so I can prove to you that this promise of your protection is going to be fulfilled. And that's when he said, I won't test the Lord, but Isaiah said, you're really testing the Lord now. You're trying His patience. Why? How was he trying His patience? Because he was putting on a pretense of piety or righteousness. Ahaz was offered a choice of signs. He declined to take them. He was really feigning piety by saying that he would not test God by asking for a sign. Now, it was wrong to test God. That's true. Deuteronomy 6, verse 16 says, you shall not test the Lord your God. That's true. But in this case, God had actually offered Ahaz his choice of signs. So God saw that his refusal to ask for sign was really just a display of false piety, as if to say, God, my standards of righteousness are just too high to accept your offer of a sign. As if he knew better than God. Ahaz was a wicked king. As a matter of fact, ultimately, to show his unbelief, he sought help from Assyria in an alliance against the alliance of Israel and Syria that was coming against him. He was an evil man. Now he's putting on a pretense of piety. God did not like them. So the irony is that Ahaz chose to express lack of faith in a way that made him seem faithful. And it was Ahaz's general obedience, general sin in his life, that really tested God. He was testing God. He was trying God's patience by his sin. But now he's acting pious. I won't ask God for a sign. Ahaz is a prime example of a pious pretender. A second example, well-known example in the Scriptures, is that of the scribes and the Pharisees. In Matthew, the 6th chapter, for instance, I don't know that it actually mentions the Pharisees by name in verses 1 through 18 of Matthew chapter 6. But from what we know of the Pharisees, we know he had them in mind. They were the sort of people that he was talking about. He said, some practice their righteousness to be noticed by men. And he gives the examples of, you know, almsgiving and fasting. They did that very conspicuously in order to be seen by men so that men would say, well, look, they're pretty righteous. They're good people. How do we know that? Well, they say these long prayers. And it's obvious that they're fasting because, look, they look pretty scraggly to me, you know. So they must be fasting, which means they're good people, they're righteous people. That's a pretense of piety. Because they sinned in other ways. Now, to the Jews of the first century, the scribes and Pharisees were the ones who set the standard of righteousness. And so it must have shocked people when Jesus said in his Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, verse 20 particularly, you know, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you won't enter the kingdom of God. Or words to that effect. You've got to be better than them. Ooh, how can we be better than the Pharisees? Well, for one thing, you can quit acting hypocritically. So the Pharisees strove not for real righteousness, but an appearance of righteousness by engaging in such actions as long public prayers and conspicuous almsgiving and fasting, well, since they believed they could confirm their righteousness by popular approval, it was more important to them what others thought of them than what God thought of them. What people see and hear from people testifying to their righteousness is more important than having God's approval. More important than the approval of the unseen God. The Pharisees' hypocrisy made it clear that they were not really righteous. Sometimes Jesus pointed out, here's what you really do. Perhaps behind the scenes. A third example of piety by pretense. This might be surprising. It was true in the case of some preachers or teachers of the gospel in a couple of different places, perhaps. At least one, certainly. Rome. In Philippians, the first chapter, verses 15 through 18, Paul pointed out that some preached the gospel out of envy and strife and selfish ambition. Let me just read what Paul has to say to you about these people in Philippians 1, verses 15 through 18. Some, to be sure, he says, are preaching Christ even from envy and strife, but some also from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am appointed for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition rather than from pure motives, thinking to cause me distress in my imprisonment. And Paul's very magnanimous about this. He says, what then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in this I rejoice, yes, and I will rejoice. Their motives were bad, but the message was right, and the message was actually saving people. And even though it might have worked to Paul's hurt, he was happy that souls were being saved. That's not to say that these preachers with evil motives were going to be saved, even though the effects of their work was good. But what we see here is that they were motivated to cause Paul harm, perhaps by drawing the Romans' attention to him as a teacher of a religion which should have been illegal. So draw attention to Paul and get him in trouble. The more we preach, the more trouble we'll cause by Paul, for Paul, rather. The other example is that of Thessalonica, or at least Paul mentions this in his first letter to the Thessalonians. He doesn't actually say that the Thessalonians were guilty of this, but he indicates what can be the case. In 1 Thessalonians 2, verse 5, Paul says, for we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is witness. Pretext for greed. In other words, some preachers or teachers of some religions will put on a facade of righteousness or holiness. They will put on give a pretext. They will put on a pretense about their teaching. Now, Paul denied that he had used the gospel as a pretext for greed. In other words, he didn't preach the gospel in order to get his greedy hands on some money. Some will do that. Some preachers hire themselves out to teach whatever pleased those who would pay them. I'll tell you what you want to hear. Just pay me the money. There are examples of that in the Old Testament. Some kings, they would have prophets. They would be surrounded by prophets. And those prophets knew that their job basically was to be cheerleaders or propagandists for the king, or his projects, or his desires, his ventures. Okay, on one occasion, King Ahab, he wanted to go up and assault the city of Ramoth-Gilead, and all the false prophets, all they got around him was, go up and do it, you will succeed. You see, Ahab knew this is what they were supposed to do. And they knew, yeah, this is what Ahab was expecting. So, they were just kind of encouraging one another. It was really a form of propaganda back then. On one occasion, in Amos, the 7th chapter, verse 12, the prophet Amos is told to go back to Judah and there eat his bread and drink his water, or whatever. You know what that means? What that was saying? Listen, if you want to get money from your teaching and preaching, you're in the wrong place. Go where you're supposed to be and get your money to buy your bread and whatever you drink. That was the implication to that statement. Because that's what this fellow was saying. He did. It's not unusual. Preachers and teachers will sometimes, perhaps oftentimes, preach for the money. That is a form of a pretense of righteousness. Or pretense, piety by pretense. Okay, the last example that I want to use and is that of James in James 1 verse 26, or what James says there. And he says the same thing I'm saying in different words. James 1 verse 26. He says, if anyone thinks himself to be religious, you might want to substitute the word righteous or pious or devout there. If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. He's engaging in piety by pretense. He's pretending to be pious. Those who do not control their tongues, well, whatever other religion they practice is vain. It's futile. It's not going to get them anywhere with God. If a person defines his piety by emphasizing just some aspects of God's law while ignoring others, then he's engaged in a pretense of piety. You have the example of the Pharisees in Matthew 23, verse 23. Jesus said, you tithe or give 10% of even the small things like the seeds from your garden herbs. You're careful about that. But you ignore other important things like mercy and justice and faithfulness. Those weightier matters of the law, you ignore. You're putting on a pretense of righteousness by doing these little things that you want to do, you feel like you can do, but the more important things, you don't do. So, whatever a person hopes to achieve by partial obedience, he's going to lose by that partial obedience. In conclusion, let me say that it's actually impious to pretend to be pious when a person is not really pious. Why? Because it's a contradiction of reality. It's a lie. That's what it is. And hence, from that viewpoint, piety by pretense is self-defeating. I mean, why do we want to be pious or righteous or right with God in the first place? Theoretically, it should be because God will reward us, in a sense, for our righteousness. Not saying that we deserve what He's going to give us, because we don't deserve heaven, regardless of what we do. But piety by pretense is a lie. God knows it's a lie. We're not going to get anything from it. James, remember, said, that man's religion is worthless if he doesn't bridle his own tongue. So whatever we hope to achieve by this partial obedience, we're going to lose by the same from God. Piety by pretense is self-defeating. You know, I started out saying at the beginning of this lesson that this is relevant to us. I want to say that because I'm afraid that I might not have demonstrated, as I should have in this lesson, the relevancy of it. But folks, how often do we do things, maybe on Sunday, maybe here, and then go out and act differently? If we do, What are we doing here then? It's a case of piety by pretense. We're putting, as some would say, to use another expression, we're putting on an act here. So this lesson is really relevant in that we need to be careful not to deceive ourselves with piety by pretense. Let's be Christians according to the New Testament standard, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Not just for a few hours here on Sunday morning. It may be that there's at least one person here today who might be thinking, you know, I've really been practicing piety by pretense. Maybe you didn't realize that. But if you do now, I appreciate that. Maybe you haven't made yourself righteous in the way that God has planned to make you righteous by being baptized into Him so that you might become or come into contact with the blood of Christ. If that's the case with you, why not come forward in faith and in repentance to confess before us your faith in Jesus Christ today and be baptized into Him as the Scriptures require? If you've done that, but since then you've been practicing piety by pretense in some way, perhaps that has brought offense to God and brought some or hurt the reputation of God's people of which you're part, certainly have hurt yourself, and you want to come forward and make us aware that you're sorry for that. You want to ask for our prayers and encouragement as you henceforth live as you should. Won't you come if that's your need? And we'll happily receive you as we stand now for your encouragement and sing.